This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Wednesday afternoon and welcome in to Grant and Danny on the Fan. It's December 4th, 2024. We have an excellent show planned for you today. At 4 o'clock, ahead of the Beltway Blitz, we're giving away Caps tickets. And at 5 o'clock, we will blitz the East and spin you around the division, checking in with the Cowboys, Giants, and Eagles. Lots to get into. You'd think, Danny, with a bye week, a Wednesday, the team not in the facility, no press conferences, that this would be a quiet day. But there's actually a ton of really good topics and a lot going on in sports, both at the NFL and college level in football. Major League Baseball crowbarred its way into the discourse this week as well in the offseason. There's a lot to do.
Yeah, I like it, right? I mean, it's, you know, instead of saying the nickel cornerback is blank and we're doing this, that, and the other, it's actually good old-fashioned sports talk radio here today. Speaking of sports, just super fast, A, glad to see you're feeling better. Even though I don't see your face in person, I see you, and I'm glad you're doing better than you were yesterday. Two, was that A or one? I can't remember what I did first. Anyway, 2B, sports are so amazing. All we could think about yesterday when it came to the Capitals game that you went to last night was San Jose scored seven goals, like five goals a couple times. The Caps offense has been high-flying. These two teams can really put the puck in the net. 1-1 through regulation. Pitcher's duel. You know, like, the you don't know what's going to happen dramatics of sports is undefeated, man. I know it's just a hockey game on a Tuesday night in December that will go, it's anonymous, that will never be remembered for anybody. But that's all I could think about last night while I was watching, the end-to-end action is this. On paper, it was a 6-5 game. Someone's going to get the best of it. And, of course, nobody could score all night long. I love sports so much because you never know. No matter how informed or plugged in you are, no matter what the data or analytics or eye test says, no matter how many games you've seen, you can never, ever predict it.
Yeah, that's why they're the best. By the way, my little guy made it through all three periods.
Unbelievable.
And overtime last night. And, I mean, we got off to a rocky start. So my brother-in-law had to go scoop him at our house and bring him to meet us in D.C. So the three of us went to the game. And it got off to such a bad start that my brother-in-law, Danny, is calling me on the phone on his way to D.C. just to tell me, hey, man, he's nervous. He's not really feeling this right now. You know, it's not very often he hops in the car and we switch car seats and he's in my brother-in-law's, you know, back seat and driving into the city. But he was, like, whiny and wanted his mom and he's like, he wants you. So that's how the night started.
Yep.
Then when we get to the game, and we bit off a little more than we could chew probably with a weeknight game. He's three, turns four this month. But he likes watching the Caps at home. He likes playing hockey in the basement, so I thought it'd be cool. But when we got to the game, it was a lot of whining and a lot of, like, past bedtime, just kind of, this is going to go terrible.
Mm-hmm.
We got one period in us if we're lucky.
We've all been there, dude.
But guess what? We fed him a little pizza. He ate some candy. I got him a cookie. And next thing you know, he was locked in. He's chanting, let's go, Caps. He's hunting down Slapshot. And after three periods in overtime, he was still in it. He was still engaged. He was still feeling it. So you want to talk about, like, an opening drive. You fumbled the kickoff.
Yeah.
Returned for a touchdown. The first play from scrimmage was a pick six. And then we punted. We're down 14-0. That was kind of how it started. And somehow, if you just came back at the end of the game, we won on a walk-off field goal. But, yeah, we made it through the entire night. Your boy's been – it was a doctor's appointment this morning to try to figure out what's what. Got some medicine. Then went to three different places to try to get a chest x-ray. Like, it has been a grind today.
Ooh. The old get a chest x-ray bit. That's a hoot, by the way, I'm told.
Oh, I'm sure it's fun. It's a real good time. Yeah, so sounds like a sinus situation. That's the development on my end, but everything will be fine. I believe we'll be back in the saddle tomorrow. The Commanders are off this weekend. You know how I feel about bye weeks. They're a gift from the heavens, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere sandwiched in between my favorite things, like if French toast is near the top of the list with like Thin Mints, and then Coca-Cola Classic out of the fountain at McDonald's is like a couple spots lower, I think the bye week red zone experience is somewhere in that vicinity, and we get it. And although I don't know how much time you've spent looking at the NFL slate here for week 14, but unfortunately, I would say it's down a little bit. There are six bye weeks, which seems like a lot for the last weekend of byes. So there's, just by taking those out of the equation, only 13 games. And there's some decent playoff ramification matchups. But by and large, I'd say it's a slightly weak NFL slate. Still going to be cool because no pressure, no Commanders annoyances are possible.
Yeah, it is not the A slate, right? This is not one of the ones you're going to write home about, but there's still some meaningful games, kind of to your point, right? Teams that affect Washington, either good, bad, or indifferent, are in action. Now, you know, you're looking at a team chasing them like Tampa Bay, for example. They play the Raiders. That's not a great matchup. That's not much fun. You look at the Atlanta-Minnesota game. On paper, you know, Minnesota's heavily favored, and they should be because the Falcons are limping in, but how sure are you that Minnesota is good? I mean, they've won five in a row, I think, beating teams barely, you know, that aren't particularly great in their own right. So, you know, they're still some decent things on the slate that affect Washington, for example, but you're right. It's not as good as Thursday night's going to be, which is Green Bay-Detroit.
So I think there are three games that are directly going to affect the wild card conversation with Washington, and then there's another two that I put in the maybe pile, which is NFC South matchups, and that's Falcons-Vikings, which you just mentioned, mm-hmm. and I would say Raiders-Bucks as well. The only reason I don't think that's a direct effect on Washington, even though those two teams are two games behind them in the wild card hunt, is my opinion is one of them wins the division and the other doesn't get in. But you tell me if you disagree with this. I think Packers-Lions, Thursday night football tomorrow night, which should be outstanding from Ford Field in Detroit.
Indeed.
Under the lights, indoors, in Michigan on a cold night. Green Bay could fall to 10-4, which would mean they'd come out of that bye just a game ahead of Washington going into the stretch run. At that point, 9-4. If they lose that game, they'd be one game ahead of Washington going into the final four games of the season. So that would be one that's directly affecting where the Commanders are. Because if they're the 7 seed, you're playing at the 2 seed, which is either Detroit or Philly. If you're the 6 seed, which means you caught Green Bay probably, then you get to play a much worse opponent. So that's super significant. The other games that I think are directly going to affect Washington are the games that involve the three teams in the NFC West. They are in a decent spot at 500 or better. So that's a head-to-head Seattle-Arizona game, which is effectively a first-place game out in Arizona, Cardinals hosting the Seahawks. Seattle at 7-5, lead 6-6 San Fran, 6-6 LA, 5-7 San Francisco in the West. And then you've got the Rams hosting the Bills in the 4 o'clock window at 4:25. So two of the games actually are at 4 o'clock, Seahawks-Cardinals and Bills-Rams. I don't know who you're rooting for in the Seattle-Arizona game. I guess probably you'd root for Seattle and just say, okay, you guys win the division, bury the Cardinals, because they're already multiple games behind Washington, plus Washington as the tiebreaker.
Yeah, my view on that in general, by the way, is the teams at the top, I want to stay at the top. Now, if this was, if we were talking about fighting for the division, then it would be the opposite, to be honest with you. It was, you know, or fighting for a home field advantage or something like that, I'd want as high a seed as possible. To me, this is my thought is, stay in at least the 7 seed, maybe get to the 6 if Green Bay swoons with their difficult schedule here down the stretch, starting this Thursday with Detroit. So if you're a 1 seed or a 2 seed, and I know that's Philadelphia, which is uncomfortable, but you know Minnesota, I want to win out. I mean, to me, the best case scenario Washington could reasonably hope for is the 6 seed. That's if Green Bay swoons a little bit down the stretch, as I said, with a difficult schedule. But that's kind of my paradigm for the next couple weeks.
I think it would be a utter collapse that we'd talk about in 30 years at this point if they didn't make the playoffs as the 7 seed. I mean, it feels like that's almost a formality. They'd have to lose out effectively to not get the 7 seed. They're almost at an 80% rate going to make the playoffs. But to your point, the difference between the 6 seed and playing at Atlanta or at Tampa or even in Seattle or, you know, at Arizona or something, and just going to Detroit or Philly as cannon fodder feels like a game changer, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, to me, that's the difference between ending your playoff drought potentially, your last playoff win being 2005, or not, just based on if you have a shot to do that. It's not to say they couldn't beat the Eagles, especially if Philly beats them a second time in a few weeks in Landover. You know, it's hard to beat the same team three times in a year. You're going to a familiar place, a stadium you've already played this year. But I don't know. I think I'll speak comfortably for everybody listening when I say you'd rather the Commanders in the first round of the playoffs play the winner of the West or the South than the Eagles or the Lions.
Yeah, I'd rather play a worse team.
Six versus seven.
I'd rather play a team that's not as good in the postseason. Stay tuned for more analysis like that, right? Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia is obviously very, very good, and I still think they got a shot at the one seed. I mean, it depends on, you know, what happens here this Thursday, or tomorrow, rather, with Green Bay and Detroit.
Do you think Green Bay beats Detroit tomorrow?
No. I don't think they do, but I don't think it'd be crazy if it happened.
Right.
Like, Detroit probably wins.
If they beat Detroit, yeah, the path to Washington getting the sixth seed gets really difficult, I think.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
At that point, they're probably you just got to prepare for going to Philly. Although, if Detroit loses that game in that point,
then you might be going to Detroit.
That might even be worst case scenario, because now you could be going to Detroit, which I think would be as bad as it could get.
So just super quick matchups. Green Bay schedule remaining at Detroit tomorrow night. Again, that's the biggest one, obviously division rival there.
Yep.
But at Seattle, which listen, Seattle's not great, but going out there is never the easiest thing, and those teams always have these epic.
Fun.
You know, 37-34 type game. Seattle plays the NFC North. Really, it's really Green Bay and Detroit. They have these epic games with them that, like, no one can stop anybody. It's like Big 12 football. Then the Saints, who are nubs. And then at Minnesota, the second to last week of the year. So nothing easy for Green Bay down the stretch. Not all winnable games because they're a good team, obviously. But there's nothing that screams, you know, they're going to cakewalk, win five straight, and finish 14-3 going to the postseason either.
Yeah, rooting hard tomorrow for Detroit, though, I think in town, is kind of the storyline. Because if there's a path to that sixth seed, and you're going up, I'm just going to say to Tampa, which would be, even in January, 50-some degrees, you know, pleasant enough. This is not the same Bucs team that blew Washington out in week one. And I don't think we need to tell anybody that this is not the same Commanders team that got blown out in week one. But no Chris Godwin, several injuries later, just a much more mediocre Bucs operation. I think they could really have a chance to win a playoff game. But this weekend will be interesting just to see how things align as everyone evens out in games played, and then we get ready for the final four games of the season. What's your favorite game on the slate? You know, Thursday night notwithstanding, Packers-Lions. Come Sunday, what do you like best?
So we talked about a couple of them, but Chargers-Chiefs. There's the other shoe has to drop at some point on Kansas City. Not that they're not champions, not that they're not great, not that they're not going to the AFC Conference championship game again, because when Pat Mahomes plays, that's what they do. But this regular season, it's the most charmed life anyone has ever led, where all you come back and it's a missed field goal, a blocked field goal, or something bizarre that happens where teams throw up on themselves. Chargers trying to, you know, sort of ascend. Harbaugh doing the Harbaugh bit where they beat up bad teams, and now they're going on the road. Tough matchup, obviously, playing this really good Kansas City team that whose luck needs to run out at some point, whether it's this week or not. But I like that divisional matchup. I like Harbaugh getting a crack at Mahomes and company.
I think the best storyline is probably Cousins returning to Minnesota, although he's coming off of his worst game in about a decade. And so, you know, the momentum's not there. The Falcons have lost three in a row. Maybe that isn't going to end up being as competitive or fun a game as it looked like on paper. But Atlanta at 6-6, desperate, needing a win. The Vikings, 10-2, probably not as good as their record. I find that game really, really interesting and fun. But maybe Bills-Rams, to go back to the game we didn't really cover out of the NFC West. Love Buffalo at 10-2. But it just feels like, you know, a lot of their wins recently have come in games, you know, that early on were pretty competitive and then they pulled away. As you now have celebrated this week your division championship, and they still have plenty out in front of them because they're thinking about the one seed, but they had the hat and shirt game already. The Rams can't afford to lose. Like, I look at games like that sometimes when I'm betting on games this time of year in terms of where are you at on the hungry meter? Are you ravenous? Have you not eaten in a couple days? In L.A.'s case, versus kind of feeling a little bit fat if you're the Bills, because you don't need to eat that badly, right? So that game's interesting to me just to see if Buffalo can hang another win on the ledger. I mean, they are knocking on the door. If they could catch Kansas City, you'll still have a chance to have everybody come through Buffalo, which would be a game changer for them, obviously, to not have to go to Arrowhead in an AFC championship game.
Totally, yeah. Think of that, you know, January environments in the old greater Northeast in Buffalo. That would be a hoot. We could get snow out games. We could have all sorts of stuff. We just saw great theater this past week, you know, with the Bills playing in the Great White stuff. So that'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, your point's well seen, right? Where you look at a team that's desperate versus one that's really, really good. Because that's what Buffalo is. I've been wrong about them pretty much every year for the last handful of seasons where I keep going, okay, this is the year they fall off a little bit because, you know, all the attrition and they have, you know, new personnel and they got worse at receiver. And this is the year. No, it's not. They're a buzzsaw. They are a juggernaut again. They're, to me, the team that's playing the best and most consistent in the AFC. I know Kansas City has a better record, 10-1, but since Buffalo stumbled for a couple of weeks in a row, I want to say weeks 4 or 5 somewhere in there, they've been awesome. They've been right up there with Detroit and Philadelphia as, you know, 2 of the 3 or 4 best teams in the NFL.
All right, Danny, I want to pivot to baseball, and I want to start the show on the phones a little bit off the beaten path from what we would normally be doing in the fall and winter, which is taking some calls on a baseball topic. But you and I, at our core, are baseball marks. And this story is just incredible. This potential rule change in Major League Baseball, I think I speak for both of us when I say, is just completely fascinating. So nothing is imminent. Let's start with that. And I would even say it's very unlikely that this eventually happens. But the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, said this week, publicly in an interview, that they are at least talking about, that there have been initial conversations about a golden at-bat rule. And the golden at-bat rule would be that, to use an example, in the 10th inning of an October game, if the Yankees are playing the Guardians and the game is tied, and you've got Oswaldo Cabrera at the plate, and you decide you're the Yankees, that you don't want him to bat, you want Juan Soto to bat. So essentially, you would be able at any point during the game to just substitute your best hitter or the hitter you like in that matchup for another hitter. Okay, so to read from Jason Stark in The Athletic on the golden at-bat rule on how it would work, he says, each team gets to pick one at-bat at any point in the game, but only once to play its golden at-bat card. So would it save the card for the big moment at the end of the game? Would it play the card in the second inning with the bases loaded and a chance to maybe bust the game open? That's where the strategy would come into play. There are other options that they've talked about, including each team gets one golden at-bat per game, except it has to be used in the 7th inning or later. There's another iteration that has been discussed where basically a variation of the golden at-bat rule could be that only a team that is trailing or tied in the 9th inning or later would get to use a golden at-bat. That's a little bit of a less-is-more way to implement it without it being a situation where you see one per team per game, which would be 2 per game. There's another wrinkle that Stark points out for the golden at-bat rule, Danny, which is that you could have a player lead off the 9th inning, let's say. In this case, he points out like Bobby Witt for the Royals. But let's say the Nats decide that James Wood is not due up, but they want him to lead off the 9th inning. And then he flies out to right. And then James Wood's spot in the order is next. So James Wood would get 2 consecutive at-bats, potentially, is how it would work. But the idea, depending on how they'd implement it, those are different variations, is essentially that a team would send whoever they want to the plate at any moment of a baseball game in lieu of a player that's not as good. And so when we return, I want to get your thoughts on this. I'll give mine. And I want to see if there's any support for this among sports fans and baseball fans listening at 800-636-1067. Again, it's called the Golden At-Bat Rule. And while it's not imminent and probably will never happen, and I'm just editorializing, seems like too drastic a change, Rob Manfred says they're talking about it. He says there have been conversations. They brought some players and teams in on, and they're continuing to discuss it. What would you think about this massively dramatic, just drastic change in Major League Baseball? Is it necessary? Would it add to the game? You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan in early December, talking baseball of all things. So give Rob Manfred credit for that, if nothing else. But the commissioner of Major League Baseball made huge headlines this week by announcing that they're discussing the idea of the golden at-bat rule, and we're trying to figure out if any of you guys would be interested in that. By the way, coming up at 4 o'clock, we'll give away Caps tickets. At 5 o'clock, we'll blitz the East today on Grant and Danny. Danny, the golden at-bat rule would allow teams to substitute their best hitter at some point during the game whenever they wanted to. They could use the golden AB card, basically, just once in any game. And when you have a player at the plate that's not as good, you could put your best slugger at the plate to try to break the game open or even the game or take a lead. You say what to this?
Well, so at first I heard this and I reacted like everybody else would, right? Like, wait, what? This is really under consideration? No, that's so weird. And then last night I was kind of kicking this around and thinking about it. And I started to kind of realize there's something cool about this, right? Like you have this unique thing where you could always make it must see. Right? Like the whole point of the regular season a lot of times gets kind of lost in the sauce, and you know, the games don't matter enough for me. I think playoff formats should be changed, just as a quick side, to really reward teams that are good for that long. But you're trying to make the game more interesting, and I get that. So I've kind of warmed up to the idea that let's just make the full thing Rock and Jock Softball, hosted by Dan Cortez. And if players get out, they get slimed on Nickelodeon, and you can go be a rocking, you know, a sort of slam ball. You can just stop being a professional sport, and basketball should have a 20-point shot. If you bounce it from half court, it goes in. Football should have a 14-point touchdown. And let's just make everything a gimmick. And if you like this, you should go color, and we probably can't be friends. And if you think this is a good idea, I've actually lost respect for you. It's not down to zero, but it goes down from whatever it was to much lower than that. I think he's doing a David Stern bit, which you're talking about Rob Manfred, which is when no one's talking about your sport at all, period, full stop, you do something crazy and weird to get people talking about it. Like David Stern would be like, everyone has to wear a suit. Then a different year, he's like, the basketball is going to be different. And everyone complained, and then people talked about basketball. And then we went back to football when it was solved. This is a stupid gimmick. Again, it's embarrassing that it's even being considered. Stop it. Back to you.
So you had me going for a second there. And that should be impossible 10 years in, as
I really had to raise the bar. I was getting a lot of quizzical looks from the producer's room. The guy's like, wait, does he like this?
Well, notice that I didn't ask you at any point in the last 2 days off air what you think, because
yeah,
I didn't need to.
You knew.
I knew that you would despise this.
Of course.
And that you would just absolutely hate it with the passion of 1,000 fires, right? And all those flames and all that heat would be thrown at this idea. But then you started chirping about, I thought about it, and it's fun, and it's must. And I'm like, what is this? This is the ultimate face turn from Danny Ruye. But then you did in the end what I thought you were going to do. You drop kicked the commissioner.
He swerved back to the track.
Anticipated into the middle of the ring. So here's where I'm at on this. Do I like this? No, I do not necessarily like this. Do I think it's a terrible idea? Only in the sense that it is an unnecessarily massive change. I'm more of a less is more guy, but I would say generally I am more open to changes than you are. Like the new kickoff in the NFL, I wanted, and I think has been a win. In Major League Baseball, the pitch clock, which I didn't love initially when I heard about it, the moment I saw it in the minor leagues and realized, oh, this is such an over-talked about nothing burger, no one will actually notice the difference when they're watching the game, and it's just going to go way faster. The tempo is going to be up. The time of game will come down. The action and you know works because there's just a more quick developing game. This is a huge win. Mm-hmm. So I was for that. Most of the changes they've made, frankly, I've been for. This one is definitely a bridge too far in terms of like changing the fabric of the game. But here's where you're going to be a little bit annoyed, I think. I don't really have a whole lot of animus toward it either. Like, would I do it? No. If I was the commissioner, is this something I would be trying to create support for Am I making a bunch of phone calls to implement this rule? Absolutely not. If I had 100 things on my to-do list, this wouldn't be one of them. But as a baseball fan, if I found out tomorrow that they're implementing the golden at-bat rule in the 2025 season, would I be mad about that? I would not, I don't think.
Which I think is a good distinction. So here's the distinction that I want to make. The rules that you mentioned, I was in favor of pretty much all of them, right? Because it's addressing a problem. The problem Major League Baseball faced, not with you and I, but with young fans, like my sons don't watch baseball. They don't like baseball. They don't enjoy it. Because what's the complaint? The game's too slow. Whether I agree with them or not, that's how they feel. You have to change that. You need to fix that if you're baseball. Younger fans are not into it. The average baseball fan age continues to go up. You need to find a way to reach younger people. Part of that is personality. Part of that is this pace of play. The big problem that they still haven't really figured out how to solve yet, and I don't know how you really solve it, is the pitchers throw too hard. Too many guys throw too hard. It's no longer special. Everyone throws 100. So until you can fix that, you're going to really have teams built a certain way. Everyone's looking for the true outcomes, both on offense and defense, and that's how the game is going to be officiated, regulated, teams are going to be built, etc. So that doesn't change any of this. But having action, limiting pickoff throws, how boring are pickoff throws? They stink. They're the most boring thing in the game. Mound visits, they started to curb those. Those stink. You're doing the thing that football's done for so many years, where you eliminate non-action. You eliminate irrelevant, boring things where the game isn't taking place. That's good. They wanted action. They want stolen bases. They want the ball in play. That's when the game is great. They wanted more of that. They got it. This is not solving a problem. This is inventing a gimmick. It's the same way that they're, you know, as I said sort of jokingly, basketball doesn't have a seven-point shot. Right, the football doesn't have, like, if you get it, you can go for three from, you know, beyond the 15-yard line one time per game. There's a reason you don't need these kinds of gimmicks. This isn't solving an issue. This is,
no,
as I said,
but it
a
could
gimmick,
be and that's enhancing the product still,
which is
and
fine.
I'm not necessarily arguing for it, but to play devil's advocate, like, I don't know that you necessarily have to only solve problems. Like, baseball's doing fine. It wants to do better, and to do better doesn't mean you just have to address perceived issues. You could take strengths and make them stronger. You could take one of the great things you have going in your game is young superstars. So wouldn't it be cool if you were guaranteed, think from the Nationals perspective, James Wood or Dylan Cruz, let's say, at the plate in the biggest spot of the game every single night? Whereas that might happen once a week otherwise. So yeah, you are creating a gimmick, and I do think that's a very good distinction you just made. Rather than, you know, bring in your tool belt and fixing something that's broken, the commissioner here is just going, let's get cute. What's a gimmicky thing we could do to make the game more exciting? Having said that, the product would still be just like non-conversation, non-change when we're talking about that from the outside tangentially. You're sitting there 7-10 watching the Nats in a three-hour span on a weeknight, just that you're seeing a cooler moment more often.
In theory, I guess that would be the case for it. But let me push back on one thing. I do think when you're taking out your toolkit, if you start going, well, this is good, but let me see if I can ramp this up to 11, you look back in a few years, and we're now talking about, well, the defense needed to even things up because the offense got too good. So we get the one time we get a fourth outfielder per game. Well, we get one time where the strike zone increases per game on somebody. And now you're left with nothing but gimmicks, and the game isn't recognizable anymore. To me, what you should be doing is tweaking where your weaknesses are, because your strengths, you just said, aren't changed by this, right? Your accentuated strengths are already in full display. They already exist. You already have the highlights. You already have the young stars who are doing things at a higher level than anybody's ever done them. You've already got Shohei Ohtani. You don't need to add a gimmick in order to make yourself more palatable, lest you change the game fundamentally. There's a difference to me between saying, hey, we have an issue. Here's the issue. Let's get this back up to the rest of where our sport is, right? Where the NFL had a kickoff problem. The kickoff was the most boring play you could possibly imagine, because the guy kicks it and then the dude makes the I'm a big letter T and I sit in the end zone and we go to commercial break. People were fed up with that, so they changed it. That to me is when you should be tweaking the game, not going, you know what we could do is, I don't know, just make up some sort of fundamental rule change where you get to have a play where the offense gets 12 guys. Like, you would never do that.
There's something, though, Danny, too. Football and basketball are still growing in a lot of ways in terms of TV numbers, mm-hmm. global popularity. We'd have to dive deeper into some of the metrics, but like the attendance in Major League Baseball, I don't think is growing compared to 5 years ago necessarily, right? And so in football, I don't know that there's as much of an interest in changing things that aren't broken as maybe in baseball you're looking to attract more eyeballs. Like football does a good job always trying to grow the number of people under its tent naturally, but it doesn't have to do that. Because it's just happening anyway. It's a machine. They print money. They own a day of the week. Baseball doesn't really have that. But I think that you're adding a must-see moment, and that's probably what the commissioner has in mind. You're trying to add a reason for everyone to scurry to the, you know, the channel to watch that at bat or to not leave the ballpark. You know, if the Nats are down a run going into the ninth inning and 7, 8, 9 are batting, that's considerably less interesting than if James Wood's leading off the inning because they're using their – or you know James Wood will bat even though he just got out two batters ago because they're going to put him back in the plate in the ninth inning. Again, I would not advocate for it if I was the commissioner. I would certainly wouldn't want it on my resume as what I brought to baseball. But I guess I'm more open to it than probably the average fan in the sense that while it's not really for me, I wouldn't despise it. And I think most people that hear this that are huge baseball fans, you know, I was talking to my buddy, and it was like a comical. I wish I could play the audio of our conversation the other night. He's like, well, why don't they just, you know, why don't they the Savannah Bananas then?
That,
let's just
honestly,
make it banana baseball.
Yeah, it's Harlem Globetrotter Savannah Banana stuff. Like, do we get an extra out if we do it a trick play for a catch in the outfield? If a guy flips?
No, we don't.
Well, we also don't send up a batter whenever we feel like it. And we do choreographed dance. Like, stop this. Stop trending in that direction.
So here's a poll that I posted on Twitter from a couple of nights ago, at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter if you want to go look at it. But I asked, would you want to see the golden at-bat rule implemented in Major League Baseball? Only 15% of people said yes, and about 85% said no. Does that surprise you that it was that steep in the no column?
I'm surprised 15% of people said yes. Not because
really?
You probably think that's I'm about to do a bit and I'm yelling at those people. To me, anytime you have a rule change, remember that you probably would have gotten that for, do you want to ban shifts? Maybe not that one, but like, do you want a DH? Do you want a pitch clock? Do you want to limit certain things? I think it would have been that stark before people saw the permutation. So I'm actually surprised that that many people were in favor of, yes, let's have this huge fundamental shift and change in baseball.
800-636-1067 is the number. I want to hear from you guys on this next, on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Take some thoughts and some calls on this. Would you be into the golden at-bat if Major League Baseball implemented it? Yes or no? You're listening to The Fan. G&D on The Fan, welcome back. Thanks for making the show part of your day. In a minute, I want to get into what Austin Eckler told us yesterday about the possibility that he would play again this season. But to put a bow on our golden at-bat conversation, Danny, I don't think this will ever happen. I think that there is a benefit if you're the commissioner, Rob Manfred, to floating a bunch of these things out and having them discussed all over the place. Partially like a trial balloon to see what resonates and what doesn't, what hits and what doesn't. Also, though, and in this case maybe, just to get your sport out there.
Yep.
Because nobody's signing anybody of note right now, and it's playing at best third fiddle to baseball and basketball in the moment, and you could even to football and basketball. But you could even make the case that it slid lower down the totem pole here in December. But where are you at? What do you think the percentage chance is that we ever see this? I would set it at like 5%.
Oh, I think it's closer to 35 or 40 within my lifetime.
Really?
Yeah. I think this is the, as younger fans come up and younger fans then turn into decision makers as adults, their proclivities are different than mine. Like, if you look back again at the baseball I grew up with in the 80s it's, I don't want to say it's unrecognizable, because it's still, you throw the ball, catch the ball, hit the ball, but the accepted norms are so different than you would have seen 25, 30, 40 years ago, that's the trend line. It's we're moving towards stuff like this in all sports. And so to me, I think this is something we will see. Whether it's in my lifetime or just afterwards, I think changes like this are inevitable to sports. I really do, to capture the entertainment dollar.
I think the changes are happening and there's no stopping them. This is so severe, though, and so kind of unnecessary. Not negatively, but it's just not something that has to happen. It'd be something that happened because they want it to, that I don't see this one. But I think by putting it out there, in some ways they wanted to see what fans thought and what kind of interest there might be. One thing I did think of, though, Jason Stark of The Athletic was going through a bunch of different ways that they could do this. What happens if you, like, let's say, I keep using James Wood because he is the guy who's worth the price of admission for the Nationals. If he's due up second in the inning and you have him lead off the inning, so you sub him in for somebody else, and then he's due up next. What if he gets a hit and he's on base and then he's due up again? Is there just a pinch runner for him? We're not doing ghost runners, obviously, but you have to run for him then, burn a bench spot, or does someone else just get to run and it doesn't count against your bench?
Or the guy he hit for isn't out of the game. He just got golden ruled.
Oh, good point.
So that guy just goes back in.
Yeah, maybe that guy just goes on base now. That's a good point.
So that would be my guess, honestly, as to how they would handle that. But, yeah, I mean, again, you said ghost runner. It just reminded me, within my lifetime, if you had asked me at age 20, age 30, whatever, hey, will they just eventually, for extra inning games, just start with a guy on second? I would have gone, that's adorable. Of course they won't do that. That would be the most fundamental crazy change in history, and now it's normal to us that it's happening. So yeah, it just popped into my mind when you said Ghost Runner. But yeah, that unique scenario, by the way, where Ohtani leads, like he just goes full Bugs Bunny. Ohtani leads off, Ohtani bats second. Ohtani wins it with two base hits in a row, you know, driving himself in. Like, who gets credit for the run, by the way? Who gets the run?
By the way, is that bad for baseball? The Shohei Ohtani show, or the, you know, it's not some random scrub that's getting that love in the ninth inning.
It's not Wilmer Defoe.
The biggest stars in the game, right? So there's something to be said for that.
Who gets credit for the run if Shohei Ohtani drives in Shohei Ohtani? The run. Who gets credit for the run scored? RBI, I got, because that's Shohei.
Yeah, I think Shohei would.
Even though he didn't score? It's somebody else?
I don't know. I can't help you there. But that is part of what I don't like, in the same way of, you know, the runner at second, you get a loss if that runner scores because it's an earned run. It should be unearned, right? It just does, that part doesn't make, or it is an unearned run, actually.
Yeah, you give up two medium deep fly balls to right, you lose.
Exactly. You lose as a pitcher. That's
hate that.
But now if you start allowing hitters in the most ideal situations, bases loaded, couple runners on to bat, you know, home run totals, RBI totals, a lot of things are going to be skewed in a way that is unfair to the guys that came before in terms of counting stats. So some of that matters to me too, and it's another reason why I don't think it will have a whole lot of player support, certainly. All right, let's play, though, for people in case they missed it yesterday. Austin Ekeler, when we asked if he was definitely going to play again this season, at the very end of his interview, I listened to the interview again last night, and particularly that answer, and I had a takeaway that I didn't have live in real time that I want to bounce off you. This was Ekeler yesterday when we said, so it sounds like we will see you again before the end of the year.
Hey, man, it's week to week. It's one of those things I want to continue to learn more about. Hey, it's my second concussion. You know, what am I more susceptible for a third one now that I've had two and the severity of mine? So it's a learning process for me because I've never had anything like this bad and twice in the same year. So it's one of those things where, you know, I'm human. I don't know everything about my conditions right now. I have some new ones that I'm dealing with, and it's one of those things where you just got to continue to learn and then try to make the best judgment. The best thing about it is the team's got my back pretty much on any decision that I make, and so I really appreciate DQ and Adam Peters for being there and kind of being, you know, open to helping me out.
So my question, Danny, is do you listen to that like I do and say, he may not come back after he's off injured reserve?
Yeah, I thought
injured
that.
Injured reserve is four games, which would let him come back for week 18 against Dallas, and then he would be eligible for the playoffs, which I thought was kind of a foregone conclusion. But the way he answered that question when I listened back last night, it sounds to me, and I shouldn't be surprised, nobody should, he's so smart, he's got a whole lot of other options after his playing career, but I think he wants to do a lot of research before he makes the decision to play again this year, more so than like a Tua or one of these guys who just goes, I'm going to play. You're going to have to scrape me off the field. Austin Eckler's going, we'll see what happens. I'm looking into this right now.
Yeah, I thought that in real time yesterday, but maybe not as strongly as I think about it now, if that makes sense, right? Because you're in the interview, I'm also thinking about next question and thinking about, you know, some of the other different things. Heard his response, and as usual, as you said, very well, rightly, just a thoughtful person, thoughtful dude, just thinks about things in a 360 view, and you know, isn't one of those, like, as soon as they tell me I can go, I'll start headbutting everything again. You'll see, you know, obviously he's just, you know, just too in tune and too smart for that. But he's 100% right, by the way. I was trying to think of the timeline exactly. I can't remember exactly which games are, you know, when he missed previously with the concussion, but it's not that far apart in terms of like real time. Just a matter of weeks. Yeah, a matter of a couple of months where not that much has changed, except, you know, kind of your entire perspective on your career. This isn't like it's not a chronic thing that has happened to him throughout his career. It's now all of a sudden twice within 2 months, basically, that you have been knocked out cold and you didn't remember leaving the field either time. Again, that's what he told us yesterday. I mean, he was great talking about him. He was so candid and awesome. But I understand having some perspective on that, certainly, and wanting to ask some questions.
If you guys missed that interview, make sure you podcast it when we're done tonight, thefandc.com. Late September is when he suffered that concussion. It was in Cincinnati.
That's right.
I think that was week three. But you're talking about 9 weeks ago, essentially, that he suffered the first of what he called two serious concussions, and this one specifically, very serious. And you know, he just didn't have the memory of how he even got off the field. I mean, those are scary things that he's got to deal with now moving forward as he tries to get information that he needs on whether he's more susceptible for a third concussion at this point. Next on G&D, I think this will be a fun little conversation on sportsmanship. James Franklin, Mike Locksley, Penn State, Maryland, getting into it over the weekend. Who was right? Who was wrong? You're listening to The Fan.